and of course she started keeping her phone on swipe lock, so he could see everything on there, any time he wanted. He had some willpower, not touching that phone on Saturday night. It hits me, all over again, how much of a fight me and Steve are in for. She was okay with that? I ask. Lucy lifts a shoulder. She didn't care. It was only for a few months, right? And Joe being obsessed was what she wanted. She wasn't complaining. But I didn't like it. A control freak like that. She lets it fall. I don't pick it up. She's right, obviously. This should have been yet another alarm bell waking Aisling the hell up. This guy who couldn't let a text or a post-it go out of his control. How did she think he was going to take it when she kicked him to the curb? Her own floodwaters had risen so deep around her, they drowned it out. She underestimated herself, too. By the beginning of December, Lucy says, Aisling said she was nearly there with Joe. He told her he loved her all the time. He was constantly going on about the great stuff he'd do for her when they could be together. He was this close to offering to leave his wife. And Ash, Jesus, she was on a total high, all the time. Talking a mile a minute and screaming, laughing at nothing and never able to sit still. She was like someone on speed. Not from having a guy wrapped around her finger. Ash wasn't like that. Because her plan was working. She could hardly believe it. To her, it was like finding out that magic was real and she had it. She could turn pumpkins into carriages. She could turn princes into frogs and back again. Does that make any sense? Do you get it? Yeah, I say. I totally get it. Out of nowhere, I think of my first morning on murder. Me in my new suit, cut for victory, satchel swinging and shining, my heels on the footpath laying down a fast rhythm on the city swirl of buses and voices as I sliced straight through them, heading for the murder squad room waiting for me finally, finally all my own. I could have done the walk to the door in 10-foot leaps. That morning, I could have pointed at the castle and made its roofs unfurling great gold petals and trumpet blasts. Lucy says, jamming out her cigarette. And then Rory came along. I say, Rory wasn't in the plan, no? The plan. She spreads her hands with a flourish. I'd started thinking of it like that, in capital letters, the plan. Da-da-da-dum. No, Rory definitely wasn't in the plan. Rory was my fault. I dragged Aisling out to that book launch, and it took some dragging because I was hoping if she had a night off from sitting at home obsessing over whether Joe would call round, if she went out and had a laugh and a chat about normal stuff with people our age, then she might get some perspective. Realise how mental this whole thing was. Meet a nice, normal guy, I say. It never occurred to me that she'd get that far. I was just hoping she'd have a non-insane evening. But 1 hour with Rory and Ash was head over heels. She was totally freaked out by it. This was the last thing she was looking for, especially just when she was getting Joe where she wanted him. She couldn't even believe she'd spent that long talking to Rory. She had this rule about not talking to a guy for too long, in case he thought he was in with a chance. Ash figured that wasn't fair. When she wasn't on for a relationship. You told us the reason she had that rule was because she liked to make guys work for it. Lucy shrugs. That was the best I could come up with. I had to tell you she'd cut off her chat with Rory halfway through the evening because other people might have noticed that. But I wasn't about to tell you she wasn't into relationships or you wouldn't have gone looking for her secret guy. And I couldn't exactly go into the whole thing. Fair enough, I say. For someone who doesn't like coming up with scripts, Lucy's done a lot of it the last while. Aisling got good at sucking people in, all right. So Aisling didn't know what to do about Rory. That smile on one side of Lucy's mouth again, tender and bruised. No, she knew exactly what to do about him, give him the brush off. But she couldn't do it. She thought he was the best thing since sliced bread. We went back to hers that night, after the lunch, and she could not stop talking about him. She was all pink and giggly, like a kid, and she kept going, "Oh, what do I do? Oh my God, Luz, what do I do?" "What did you say?" The smile breaks up. By this time, I had no qualms about telling Ash what to do. I went, "You ring Joe tomorrow and cut him loose. Tell him you can't live with yourself if you break up a marriage. Some bullshit like that." Lucy's hands go through her hair again. I could hear myself sounding like her, making up stories. I just wanted her out of the whole Joe thing before she pulled the pin and blew herself to bits. I told her, "And then when Rory rings you, which he will, you say yes. I'd love to meet up, thank you very much," I told her. "This is how you get your revenge on Joe. By not letting him lose you a guy you actually really like. By not letting him run your life anymore, right?"
"Sounds dead right to me," I say.
"Sounds like she should have had it tattooed on her arm. But no." Lucy shakes her head. "No way. Not a chance. And being honest, I could see why not. The amount Ash had put into this, all the planning, all the energy, all the starving herself, and shagging this guy she loathed for months. And right when it was all about to pay off, when the explosions were about to go off and the big soundtrack number was about to kick in, I was telling her to ditch the whole thing. And she was telling Ashlyn to give up the magic, just when she was about to start shooting fireballs out of her palms."
"That wouldn't be easy," I say. "I get that."
And then, of course, 2 days later, Rory texted Ash, wanting to meet up. If she said no, he'd take it as a brush off, obviously, and she couldn't exactly say, "Could you just give me a month or two while I finish shagging this guy into leaving his wife, then I'll be all yours." She stalled him a bit, as much as she could, without him thinking she wasn't into him. But in the end, she said, "Yes, yes, let's meet." And they went for a pint and they had an amazing time and Ashlyn was totally smitten. But she still didn't break it off with Joe. No. She just started trying to nudge him along, hurry the whole thing up. She dropped hints about how much she missed him when he had to go home and how she wanted to have babies and she wasn't getting any younger. She had to be extra careful because the last thing she wanted was him getting all noble and giving her up because she deserved better, or getting paranoid that she was sticking holes in the condoms. It was... Lucy's hands go over her face and she laughs into her fingers, a laugh with a sob caught in it. Jesus, it would have been hysterical if it wasn't so insane. How'd Joe react? I was praying he'd do the grand renunciation. I was trying to send him thought waves. I'm not even joking. Another half sob of laughter. But nope. Joe just followed right along where Ashlyn was taking him. 3 weeks ago, just after New Year's, he told her he was going to leave his wife. McCann, who used to brag to Ashlyn's mother about how he'd never leave his family. She'd fed all that into the shredder. I say, "I bet she was delighted with that." "Oh, yeah." Lucy wipes her hands down her face. This is taking a lot out of her. Yeah, she was over the moon. Except Joe wanted to wait till summer. One of his kids is doing the leaving cert. Joe didn't want him upset till that was over. Meaning Ash would have 6 more months of trying to juggle him and Rory. Yeah, she wasn't happy about that at all. She cried. Not hard enough to be ugly, of course, just a cute little tear. And she told him she knew there would be something else after that. Men never left their wives. It was so hard to watch him go home to another woman, blah, blah, blah. But Joe wouldn't budge. So what did she do about it? God. Lucy grimaces, eyes closing.
Aisling was so, so badly out of her depth. This was real stuff, you know. 25-year marriages, kids. There was no way she could keep up, not a chance. All she could think of to do was keep Joe nervous, basically. She was still being perfect girlfriend, but every now and then she'd show him some Facebook picture of someone's baby and sigh, or she let it slip that some client at work had flirted with her. She just kept poking him, nice and delicately, with the chance he could lose her if he didn't get off his arse. I ask, did she ever tell him about Rory? Even a hint? You mean to make the point that she had options? Lucy shakes her head. No, I thought of that too. I specifically asked Aisling, warned her, more like, and she said no way. But I wondered if... I told you Joe wanted to be able to look through her phone. I wondered if maybe Ash was leaving a couple of texts from Rory on there, just so if Joe went looking. Which she was. Jesus Christ. I think about banging my head off the coffee table a few times. Naive didn't begin to describe this girl. That was what worried me, Lucy says. When Ash told me she had invited Rory over for dinner, they could have met anywhere, you know. If they wanted to shag, they could have gone back to Rory's. Why go where Aisling knew Joe might show up? I say. Unless she was actually hoping for that. Yeah, maybe not even consciously, but she had to know it could happen. And she was getting desperate for this whole thing to be over. Every time she saw Rory or even talked to him, she got more smitten. Deep down, all she really wanted to do was forget the whole Joe mess had ever happened and go off and spend 24 hours a day snuggling and giggling with Rory. She just couldn't quite make herself let go of the Joe plan. Maybe part of her was hoping that Joe would call round, see Rory, throw a wobbler and stamp off into the sunset, make the decision for her. Lucy catches the look on my face. We've been watching each other for so long. We're getting good at each other. I know. You think I don't know. Like I said, she was miles out of her depth. She could have genuinely thought it would go down that way. Just that simple. Jesus Christ. If only, I say. Lucy says, he did it, didn't he? Joe killed Aisling. I say, you need to keep quiet about this whole conversation. No dropping hints to your mates, nothing. Is that clear? Yeah, it is. I've kept quiet about this for months. I'm not going to start yapping now. I just need to know. I'm not going to be McCann, doling out info in prissy little drips. Only when my all-knowing, enlightened self has determined that it's for someone's own good. Yeah, I say. I'm pretty sure he did. Lucy puts a knuckle to her mouth and nods for a long time. This wasn't a surprise, but hearing it out of my mouth changes it. It takes her a while to get used to. She asks, was it on purpose? Was he actually trying to kill her? Or was it something where he just snapped and didn't realise? I don't know. Has he ever done anything like this before? I mean, not exactly like this, obviously, but... I say. You mean, should you have seen this coming? Yeah. I wouldn't have, I say. And I know McCann a lot better than you do. I've never heard even a hint of a rumour about him smacking his wife around or giving a suspect the slaps. And we all know who does that and when they get away with it and who doesn't. He's not a violent guy. The thing is, I was scared this would blow up. I said to Aisling, Lucy catches a tight breath. Back in September, when she told me she'd got Joe into bed, I asked her, and we were in the flowing tide, but it was noisy enough that we could talk. I said, have you told him I'm your best friend? She said no, they hadn't really talked about anything else except Joe and his general amazingness. I said, then don't, please. Make sure you tell him I'm just someone you go for drinks with every now and then. Ash was like, why? I'm not going to pretend you don't matter to me.
Lucy's eyes close for a second on that. But I told her, when you pull the trigger, he's going to be raging. He's not going to just go away and sob into his pint. You'll be in Peru or whatever, seeing Machu Picchu and shagging gorgeous backpackers. He won't be able to get to you. But if he knows I'm your best friend, he'll know he can get to you by doing things to me.
Things, I say.
What were you worried he'd do?
I didn't even get as far as specifics. I just, me on my own in this flat, you know? A guard could do whatever he wanted, plant anything, do anything. I didn't want to find out. I figured I was safest staying far away from the whole drama.
Lucy's head goes back, that dry flick of a laugh up at the ceiling. That hasn't gone to plan. But that wasn't even the real point. The point was, I needed to get it through to Ash. This isn't a game. I'm genuinely frightened that you're doing something that's actually real-life dangerous. I knew she didn't give a fuck that she was taking risks. But I thought maybe if she realised she could be putting me at risk as well, she might pay attention.
But even that didn't get through.
Nope. A small, jerky shrug. Even through everything else, that still stings. Aisling said, sure, okay. She'd drop in a mention of me, make sure Joe thought I was just some sort of friend left over from school. But she was only doing it to shut me up. She didn't think it was important. Like I said, all she could hear was the story in her head. Anything outside that was just... Lucy makes a yappy mouth sign with one hand, just noise. And I should have known that.
Aisling had got herself in deep, I say.
You did your best. She shakes her head like I don't get it. No. Where I went wrong was, I never thought of this. I knew Aisling was playing with fire. And I knew Joe was the wrong guy to pull this shite on. Someone who thinks he's got the right to decide whether or not you know where your own father's gone. How is he going to react when someone else does the same thing to him? But I never thought of this. I thought maybe when Ash dumped him, he might hit her, yeah. But mainly I was worried that he'd decide to fuck up her life. Have her arrested for some bogus reason. Land her in jail. Make her spend years and thousands of quid fighting made-up charges, then start all over again. That was what I thought when you guys showed up here on Sunday. That Joe had called round to Aisling's, he'd seen Rory there, and he'd found some way to have her arrested for something.
Makes sense, I say. That's what I would have worried about too.
And instead, it was this. Lucy has her fingers wound in the fringe of the throw, so tight they've gone white and lumpy. And now I keep wondering, what if I'd said the opposite to Aisling that night? If I'd said, you make sure Joe knows how close we are. If he'd known that Ash was probably telling me the whole story, do you think he'd have... Would he have stopped himself from...
Would have made no difference. The split second where McCann decided to throw that punch was too small to fit any calculations. But I need Lucy feeling guilty.
No way to tell, I say. No point in beating yourself up over it now. We just do everything you can to help me get him.
Lucy's eyes come up to meet mine. She says bluntly,
you said the other detectives want you out. Are you going to be around to get him?
I say, I never have given one solitary fuck what the other detectives want.
Seriously, because I'm not going to go in there and sign a statement about all this. And maybe have Joe fucking up my life if it's not even going to do any good.
I say, I can't guarantee you that McCann will go to prison. Even with your evidence, we've got maybe a 50-50 shot. But what I can guarantee you is that if you put what you've told me into an official statement, his life won't just go back to the way it was. I'm going to make absolutely fucking sure of that. And I'm not going anywhere till it's done. Is that good enough? After a moment, Lucy lets out her breath and pulls her fingers free of the throw fringe.
I guess it'll have to be, she says.
You've got my card, I say.
I seriously doubt McCann's going to come after you. It would be too risky and it wouldn't do him a lot of good, now that you've talked to me. Plus, he's going to have other stuff on his mind.
But if anything happens that worries you, if anyone gives you hassle, or even something just strikes you as weird, you ring me, yeah?
She nods, flexing her fingers to get the blood back into them. But I'm not sure if she's really heard me.
I wanted Ash to have that happy ever after ending, she says. I really did. Even if it was a million miles away with that backpacker in Machu Picchu. She deserved it. But it's like she wasn't able to want that for herself. Not till she got Joe out of her way. She could barely even see the happy ending. That's how huge he was in her head.
Or else she saw it just fine, I say.
And she wanted it.
But she wanted to get Joe even more.
This shrink-style crap is making me antsy. Or maybe that's just from sitting still, hearing about people's stupid sides when there's shit I need to be doing. I get up. I'll be in touch when I need you to come in and give your statement. Till then, thanks. I mean it.
Lucy makes a small, worn noise that could be a laugh.
Look at that, she says. Here we are, you and me, getting Ash what you wanted all along. I guess this was one way to get it.
She walks me to the door of the flat, but she shuts it behind me fast without coming downstairs.
Lucy's got some crying to do.
Me? I've got nothing to do except head down the lopsided stairs that smell of soup and dead flowers, with Lucy's story hammering inside my head while I try to work out what the hell I'm going to do with it.
Chapter 16. I get in my car and check my messages. Phones go on mute during interviews, or Sod's Law says your ma will ring. Text from Sophie. Got DNA profile from fluids on mattress. Male, not in system. Get me sample from your suspect, we'll run comparison. Steve sent me an audio file of Breslin, explaining to him how much potential he has, and how he should be sure not to throw it away. Random Google Blonde has another 4 million depressing messages from the various dating sites. I delete her accounts. I text Steve. Ring me. Then I sit there, running the heat to try and thaw my feet after Lucy's flat, and watch the people going past. They make me edgy. Dozens and dozens of people. They just keep coming, and every single one of their heads is crammed with stories they believe, and stories they want to believe, and stories someone else has made them believe. And every story is battering against the thin walls of the person's skull, drilling and gnawing for its chance to escape and attack someone else, bore its way in and feed off that mind too. Even the cute little student mincing along in her flowery dress. The shuffling old fellow with his shuffling spaniel. They look a bowl of lethal. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with me. Maybe I'm getting the flu. It's 11 minutes of this before my phone lights up with Steve's name. Hey, I say, can you talk? Yeah, not for long. I'm supposed to be talking to the staff and the newsagent. Breslin's only across the road in the bakery. You get the file? Yeah, I say, listen. Once I showed Lucy that note from Aisling, it took her about a quarter of a second to ID the mystery boyfriend. Only it wasn't Breslin. Before Steve can ask what the hell, it hits him.
Jesus. McCann. Bingo. What the? Why?
I give him the fast version. At the end, he says, after a moment of silence.
Oh, Jesus.
His voice sounds raw. Yeah. We can do that part later. You got anything I should know? Steve says.
My guy at the mobile company emailed me.
full records on the phone that called it in.
Anything to prove it's Breslin's?
No, all the other numbers trace back to journalists, including... I know what's coming. I say it with him. Crowley? Breslin, the little shit. He's been top of the rat list from the get-go, but it still gives me a quick hit of anger. Let me guess, I say. Early Sunday morning. 6:45. That pulls a hard crack of laughter out of me. And then he came in and gave us a lecture about squad loyalty. What a load of bollocks. Breslin figured if the pressure around this case got turned up high enough, I'd sign off on Rory Fallon just to get it off my desk. He knew that little cocksucker Crowley would jump on the chance to give me shite. And he shoved me straight under Crowley's wheels. Gave Crowley the scoop, told him to go all out. Hints that I wasn't up to the job. Photos that made me look like a raving lunatic. The bleeding shyhawk.
Sounds about right, Steve says.
The tight, wound note to his voice means something's at him. But my mind's not on that. My Crowley problem didn't begin on Sunday morning. When were the other calls from that phone to Crowley? I ask.
There's just the one call, 8 to other journals over the last year or so, but just the Sunday morning one to Crowley.
Crowley's magic appearances started last summer, and there have been 4 or 5 of them since. If Breslin's been using that phone to run his journals, he's not the one who's been running Crowley into my scenes. Not until this one. Me, sulking at my desk, convinced everything about this case was part of a big, dark conspiracy against me. I feel like a gobshite all over again.
Here's the thing, Steve says. His voice has tightened another notch. How'd Breslin know we had the case? Because he called it into Stony Batter almost 2 hours earlier. Even allowing for delays, paramedics, uniforms, whatever, I had to be hitting the squad by then.
No. How do you know it was you and me? Crowley's a Q-hewer. He knows the score. He wouldn't give serious trouble to O'Neill, say, or Winters if one of them had pulled the case. He wouldn't want to burn his bridges with them and all their mates. You and I are the only ones he'd be willing to hassle. Ringing Crowley wouldn't have done Breslin any good. Unless he already knew the case was going to us. And the gaffer only gave it to us just before 7.
The silence lands hard. Down the line between me and Steve I hear wind and a faraway kid screaming and the hiss of emptiness.
Maybe Breslin knew we were on night shift, I say. He knows the gaffer always throws us the domestics.
I can hear in my own voice how weak it is. Steve says, how do you know the case wouldn't come in 10 minutes later and go to one of the day shift?
The squad room, waiting in cold early light for the day to begin. O'Kelly, tossing the call sheet on my desk.
I picked it up on my way in and said I'd bring it upstairs to save Bernadette the hassle.
I say, and my voice sounds calm and clean and very strange.
Breslin had talked to the gaffer.
Steve says, can you think of any other way he could have known? Is there a call to the gaffer in the phone log?
No, he must have used his regular phone for that. He knew we traced the Stony Batter call. He wasn't going to have the gaffer's number shown up on that same phone. He couldn't do anything about the calls to journos. But anyone can ring journos, and we can't make them reveal their sources. He figured those wouldn't come back on him.
O'Kelly, scanning the roster, hands in his pockets, rocked back on his heels.
You'll need backup on this one. Breslin's due in. Have him.
I say, the gaffer knew all along. He put Breslin on the case to keep an eye on us.
Yeah, Steve says.
Yeah. Fuck, Antoinette.
We can't afford to get angry, or wired, or anything else. Not now. Keep it together, I say sharply. I hear Steve blow out a long breath.
I know. What time are you and Breslin going to be back at the squad?
We're pretty near done here, say 45 minutes, an hour, max.
I'll throw him a ball to chase. When he heads off, meet me in the garden outside HQ.
Okay. Gotta go.
And Steve hangs up.
The people going past the car seem like they're speeding up, driven along by that unstoppable savage thrumming inside their heads. I still have that off-kilter feeling, like a fever starting. I can't afford the flu today any more than I can afford to lose the head. I need to head out to Stonybatter, but first I set my phone number to private. Ring the general unit and ask them, in a timid little girly voice with a nice middle-class accent, if I could please talk to Detective Breslin about Aisling Murray who got murdered. They put me through to the murder squad when Bernadette answers and tells me Detective Breslin is out and she'll get someone else for me. I get all nervy and say no thanks. But could I maybe leave him a message? And she pats me on the head, more or less, and puts me through to Breslin's voicemail.
This is Detective Don Breslin, smooth as a coffee ad.
He probably did a dozen takes.
Leave a message and I'll get back to you. Beep.
I keep my mouth a few inches from the phone, just in case.
Hi, my name's... I don't really want to... But I'm a friend of Simon Fallon. I heard you were asking him about his brother Rory. And I mean, I used to hang out with Rory as well. And he did some things that probably you should... I never reported it, but... Simon said you were really nice. I'm in the top house bar in Howth, in beside the fireplace. If maybe you could come here, I can probably stay till like 4. Otherwise, I guess I can try some other time. Or, well, thanks. Bye.
I put my phone away and floor it for Stonybatter. That should do it. Breslin will get in, check his messages, cream his Armani suit, turn right around and zoom off to find out what terrible things Rory did to this poor girl. He leaves Steve behind, in case she can't bring herself to spill her story to two big bad D's at once.
40 minutes to Howth, at this time of day, and in this weather. Say, 30 minutes of waiting for Mystery Chick, or till 4 o'clock if we're really in luck.
Then 40 minutes back for at least 2 hours, me and Steve will have McCann all to ourselves. Ganley's is empty apart from the baldy barman, who's stacking glasses and humming along to Perry Como singing Magic Moments on the radio.
Ah, he says, giving me a nod. It's yourself. Did I win?
You got into the next round, I say. The woman you identified for me the other day. Remember the guy who was in with her?
More or less. I told yous before. He wasn't the main thing on my mind.
Would you have a look at a few photos for me? See if you can spot him.
Your pal was already in yesterday, asking me the same thing. I was no use to him.
He said that, yeah. Look, these are different photos. The barman shrugs.
I'll have a go, sure. Anything to help the forces of law and order.
I pull out a fresh copy of the McCann photo array. If you see the man here, tell me. If he's not there, tell me. If you're not sure, tell me, okay?
I can manage that.
The barman takes the card and gives it a long, thoughtful gaze.
Would you look at that? He says. I'd say you've got him this time. This lad here.
He taps McCann's face.
Are you sure? I wouldn't stake my life on it, but I'd put 50 quid in it down the bookies. Will that do you any good?
I'll take it, I say, finding a pen. Initial the photo you recognise. At the bottom, write down where you've seen him before and how sure you are, and sign. The barman writes, head bent close to the page. Can you think of anyone else who was in that evening? I ask. Anyone who might have noticed the pair of them?
Ah, no. You're asking a bit much. I don't call the register at the beginning of every night.
I might have to come in and have chats with your regulars some night. I'll try and keep it low-key.
I had a feeling that was on the cards, all right.
The barman passes me the sheet and the pen.
His writing is tiny and beautiful. It deserves fountain pen and thick yellowing paper, not this.
If you're talking to this fella, tell him he's not welcome back in here. I'm not asking you if he did anything to that young one. I'm just saying people come here for a bit of peace.
He gives me one more long glance as he picks up the next two glasses.
I wouldn't have your job for all the tea in China, he says.
The uniform in Stony Batter Station says the voice sample might be the fella who rang Sunday morning. Except he thinks that fella sounded a bit different from this one. He can't explain how, but not the same. Maybe the voice was a bit higher, and maybe it had a Meath accent or else Kildare. It won't come back to him properly. No surprise there. Even if we hadn't already smeared that pointless voice array all over his memory. I'm not the only one who can put on funny voices. We've got everything we're going to get. It's lunchtime. I stop at Rory's favourite Tesco, grab two bottles of Coke and two sandwiches with plenty of meat in them. This could be a long afternoon. And head back to HQ. Sleety rain spatters my windscreen with big dirty spots. But by the time I get to the Castle Gardens, it's stopped. I pick a stretch of wall among the bushes, out of sight of the windows, and use paper napkins to get the worst of the rain off it before I sit down and open my sandwich. A couple of small birds are hopping forlornly on the wet grass. When I toss them a chunk of bread, they panic and scatter into the bushes in a wild rattle of wings. I'm only getting stuck into the sandwich when Steve comes through the garden gate, walking fast with his head down. Like that's going to magically hide the red hair from anyone at a window.
Hey, he says.
Hiya. Breslin gone. Steve brushes at the wall and sits down beside me.
Just legged it. He got a message from some girl in Howth.
Yeah. She's not going to be much use to him.
You have lunch yet?
Nah. Here. I pass him the other sandwich. Steve takes it and holds it in his two hands, not opening it.
Did you get anything good?
Tentative ID off the barman. No joy out of the uniform. Sophie's guy's got a male DNA profile off the mattress. He says,
what do we do?
I say, we need to talk to McCann. There isn't a way around it any longer. In 2 hours, maybe three, Breslin will be back and suspicious and wanting to arrest Rory. Those couple of hours are all we've got.
Steve nods. He asks, how?
We have so many weapons. You pick them up from watching other D's. You sift them out of squad room stories. You come up with your own and pass them around. You stash them all away safe for the days when you'll need them. By the time you make murder, you have an arsenal that could pulverise cities. You come into an interview carrying a 10-pound stack of papers, so the suspect thinks you've got that much against him. You stick a videotape on top, so he'll think you've got video evidence. You flip through the papers. Put your finger down and start to say something. Catch yourself.
Nah, we'll save that for later. And move on, leaving him to fret about what you're saving.
You pull out a tape recorder. My handwriting's only terrible, mind if I use this instead. So that later, when you turn it off and lean in confidentially, he'll think you're off the record. He'll forget all about the interview room recorders whirring away. You read imaginary texts on your phone and swap cryptic comments. Happy days, the searchers got lucky, with your partner. You do the fake lie detector test with an app these days. Give the guy some bollocks about electromagnetic fields and have him press his thumb on your phone screen after each question. And when you get the one where he's lying, you shift a finger and it flashes red graphs and lie, lie, lie. You tell him the live victim is dead and can't contradict him. Or the dead one is alive and talking. You tell him you can't let him leave till the two of you work this out. But if he'll just tell you what happened, he can be home on his sofa with a nice cup of tea in time for Downton Abbey. You tell him it wasn't his fault. You tell him the Vic was asking for it. You tell him anyone would have done the same thing. You tell him witnesses heard him talk about how he loved Kitty Prawn.
You tell him the pathologist says he rode the dead body till it started falling apart. You pummel him with the sickest shite you can come up with until he can't stop himself from shouting at you that that's all bollocks, that wasn't the way it went. And then you lift one eyebrow and say, yeah, right then, how did it go? And you listen while he tells you. All our weapons are useless this time. McCann's known the feel of them by heart. He's had them shaped to his hands by wear since long before we ever laid eyes on them. We're going in bare. I say, we talk to him. That's all we can do. He won't talk back. He wants to tell us the story. They all do. Deep down, he wants us to know that him and Aisling, that was true love. And whatever she was playing at with Rory was a load of shite that was begging for a punch. So let's see how much of that we can get him to tell us. Steve says, we focus on the relationship, nothing else. We don't go near Breslin being involved, or McCann will go loyal and shut his trap. Just talk about Aisling. We've got one grenade, I say. When Breslin found out that file box was full of the Desmond Murray case, he was relieved, meaning he didn't know McCann had worked that case. Meaning 2 days ago, at least, McCann hadn't made the connection. He didn't know Aisling was Des Murray's daughter. He didn't know she was playing him all along. Steve says, we saved that. Yeah, that ought to go off with a bang. The birds have forgotten their fright and come back to peck about on the grass. Breslin is across the river by now, heading north. Steve asks, where do we do it? This is what I was thinking about, all the way back here in the car, all the time I was waiting for Steve. Interview room, I say. His face turns towards me. You think? We could clear out the incident room, or come out here even. No. We throw everyone out of the instant room. We might as well put up a sign saying there's some big secret thing going down. Anyway, from now on, we need to document everything if we want a snowball's chance in hell of making a case. He'll know. The second we head for an interview room, he'll know. He will anyway, no matter where we take him. There's no way we can make this seem like a nice friendly chat. Not past the first 30 seconds. The moment we bring up him having met Aisling, he's gonna know. The thought of that moment flicks across us like a small black splatter of sleet. It stops us talking. We get the sandwiches down us, the coke for caffeine. Then we go into the murder building, in through the glossy black door with the combination my fingers could press in my sleep, nodding to Bernadette on our way past. We take off our coats and hang them neatly in our lockers. I take off my satchel and stash it away. Steve finds a copy of the family photo from the Desmond Murray case and tucks it in his suit pocket. I take photos of arrays on my phone and then I shove them to the bottom of my locker and hope no one picks today to piss in it again. The twin metal slams of our locker doors echo, sharp and startled, against the tiles of the small dim room. We go side by side up the wide marble staircase, our footsteps circling blurrily around the stairwell to the squad room. We go in there with no stack of papers, no video cassettes, no tape recorders. We go in with our hands empty. The squad room's almost deserted. Everyone out on cases or on lunch. For a second there, it reminds me of early Sunday morning, just before the gaffer came in to dump this case on me and Steve. The quiet just touched at the edges by the far-off drone of traffic, the white light of the fluorescence sealing the room against the thick grey press of cloud at the windows, charging the scattered paperwork and forgotten coffee cups with latent meaning. Me thinking how I could love this room, if only. McCann is hunched in his corner, peck typing. He looks worse every time I see him. Me, bloody idiot. Asking fleas to look out for anyone who seems like he's had a bad week. You could fit your case notes in those eye bags. McCann, I say. Got a few minutes?
We could do it a hand. He looks up from his computer and he knows. For a second I think he's going to shut us down. Got work of my own to do, bye. But he needs to know what we've got. And he's the veteran. We're rookies. Can't even get through this first step without cracking. Steve is shifting his feet. I'm rubbing at my mouth. McCann can't resist. He figures he can do this. Not a problem. And walk away.
All right.
He hits save and stands up. O'Neill and Winters examining a statement sheet across the room. Barely even glance over.
Thanks for this, Steve says, on our way up the stairs. We really appreciate it. Yeah. What do you need a hand with?
Aisling Murray case, I say over my shoulder. McCann's face doesn't change.
Well, we need all the witnesses we can get. Is in here okay, yeah?
I push open the door of the nice interview room, the pastel yellow one, with the coffee sachets that we used for Rory the second time round, and give McCann a hopeful look. McCann grunts. He picks one of the chairs on the detective side with its back to the one-way mirror and gives it a quick rock to see if it's a dud.
I'll have tea, he says, landing in it heavily.
Drop of milk, no sugar.
Are you sure you're all right for this?
Steve asks, obediently heading for the kettle.
Not meaning to get personal, but you're looking a bit rough, man.
Thanks.
The missus not doing your ironing this week now?
I want to know with a grin that could go anyway.
You in the doghouse?
I'm grand.
How's your personal life?
Shite, I say.
Me and Steve laugh. McCann comes up with something that's meant to be a smile, except he's out of practice.
You're married 25 years, ain't I right? How do you do it?
26. Is this what you wanted me for, yeah? Relationship advice.
Nah. You mind if we have this on? I'm already turning on the video camera. McCann's eyebrows jerk down. He didn't think we had the nads.
What the fuck do you want with that yolk?
Because I'm paranoid. A few months back, right, I got stuck helping Roach interview some scumbag's mammy. I got her to drop the fake alibi. Roach told the gaffer it was him. I pull up the chair opposite McCann, the suspect's chair. Now I video everything. I'm thinking of getting myself a body cam.
In fairness, Steve says, apologetically, dropping tea bags into cups. It's best practice to record witness statements when we have the...
Jesus Christ, McCann says. Video whatever you want.
Ah, man, Steve says.
He's practically curling into a ball with embarrassment, puppy dog eyes begging McCann not to hold it against him.
I'm really sorry about this. We'd have only loved to not bother you with this shy. If it was only one bit of evidence, then we'd have just dumped it down the back of the file and left it to go away. We wouldn't have taken up your time. But I mean, it's coming at us from all directions. We figured we'd be better off getting on top of it now.
At least you have the sense to make him the good cop, McCann says to me. I can't see you pulling that off.
Steve does an awkward laugh.
No flies on you, I say, shaking my head ruefully.
No point in us trying to pull the wool over your eyes. We wouldn't waste our time, or yours.
You are wasting my time. What do you want?
That's you put in your place, I say to Steve.
He manages an embarrassed half-grin as he makes his way to the table, eyes on his carefully balanced double handful of mugs. He passes them out and pulls the spare chair around the table next to me. McCann slurps his tea and makes a face.
So let's clear one thing up straight away, I say. Save us all some time. You are having an affair with Aisling Murray.
McCann sucks his teeth and stares at me, not bothering to hide the disgust.
You little quisling, he says.
What surprises me is that I can't even come up with a spark of anger at that.
We've got a witness who saw you chat up Aisling and take her phone number, I say. She's ID'd your photo. We've got a witness who saw you and Aisling have a drink in Ganley's together. He's ID'd your photo. We've got a witness who saw you in the vicinity of Viking Gardens at least 3 times over the past 6 weeks. He's ID'd your photo.
All of them will ID you in a lineup if you make us take it that far. Do I need to go to all that hassle? Or can we just cut to the chase? McCann drinks his tea and thinks. I can see him rearranging pieces in his head like a chess player, tracking each strategy a dozen moves down the line. What he needs to say is, no comment. That's simple. Put up a wall of that. Let us throw piece after piece of evidence at it till we run out. Then walk away. This is the one and only non-idiotic thing to do, and every detective in the world knows that. We've all had jaw-dropped conversations where we can't believe the moron actually talked to us, when all he had to do was keep his face shut and he could have gone home. We've all seen the pros fold their arms and repeat no comment on a loop till we give up and cut them loose. We've all thought it. If that was me, no way in hell would I open my big gob. We all know for a fact that if we ever get pulled in, innocent or guilty, it'll be no comment all the way. McCann can't make himself do it. Once he says no comment, he loses hold of himself as the detective, maybe forever. Once those two words come out of his mouth, he's no different from any junkie shoplifter, any pervert groping girls on buses. He's the suspect. He says, and you, Aisling Murray? We met up a few times. And that's it, I say. Yeah. Were you ever in her home? Cogs turning again, as he weighs up whether there might be anything we've managed to keep away from Breslin. Any fingerprints he missed during his swipe down. Anything that could catch him out. Yeah, he says, eventually. Had chat? Cup of tea? Ever shag her? You got a good reason for asking me that question. Me and Steve glance at each other. McCann doesn't react. I say, we got male DNA off her mattress. It's not mine. You mean you wore condoms? It's not semen. It's sweat. McCann goes back inside his head to think. I say helpfully, we're pretty sure Aisling didn't sleep with anyone else in the last couple of years. Not a budge out of him. As he weighs and measures. Then he nods. Yeah, we had the odd shag. And that's the preliminaries done with. Everything we can afford to give up, all three of us, is laid out on the table. Like the brisk initial stage of a board game, sacrifice this to take that, till almost by cooperation you've cleared the board of the small stuff, readied it for the real battle ahead. Ah, man. Steve says ruefully, raking his fingers through his hair. Ah, man, of all the girls in this town, you had to pick one who was going to get herself murdered. McCann shrugs, swigs his tea.
What can I say? She didn't seem like the type.
You should have said, Steve tells him reproachfully, as soon as the case came in. McCann's eyes move across us both like we're not worth stopping for.
If it had been any other days, I would have.
It's not like we were going to ring your missus and grass you up.
That's what you say.
You're telling me you'd have stuck by your squad. Look where we are. You know this needs doing, Steve says, worried.
It does.
What do you want us to do? Ignore all this, go ahead with Rory, and have his defence dig this up and throw it in our faces halfway through the trial?
I want you to have some respect. Something like this, you want to bring it up, you do it in private. Not in a fucking interview room. With a fucking camera going, Jesus.
He shoots a narrow, furious glance at the camera. If I was any other day, I say, I would have. But I've taken enough shite from this squad that nowadays, anything that matters, I'm getting it on record. We'll try and keep it to ourselves. But I can't promise anything till I know what I'm dealing with. It's the oldest line in the book. McCann's mouth curls.
I'll keep that in mind.
So, let's hear it, I say. Start with the first time you and Aisling met. When, where, how? McCann leans back in his chair, stretches his legs out and folds his arms, settling in.
Horgan's. Last summer.
I don't remember the date. Don't worry about it. We can find that out. Had you seen her in there before?
No. You would have noticed her.
Yeah, I would.
All the lads noticed her. Probably some of the girls too. Snide look at me.
I'm not surprised, I say. I've seen photos.
How'd you get up the brass neck to chat her up?
I didn't. She came on to me.
I laugh out loud.
Of course she did. Gorgeous 20-something. Could have any fella in the bar.
Throws herself at some middle-aged guy with a face full of wrinkles and a beer go.
She just won't take no for an answer.
What choice has the poor guy got? McCann has his arms folded tight, not budging.
I'm telling you, she wasn't forward about it. I wouldn't have been into that. But she was the one that gave me the eye.
I've still got one eyebrow high.
Jesus, come on, Steve says to me reasonably. People have different tastes, just because someone wouldn't be your cup of tea.
I like them young enough to be some use to me, I tell McCann, throwing him a wink. And good looking.
What do you do? Pay for it?
We're starting to get to him.
But that doesn't mean he's not some other girls, Steve finishes. It happens.
It does happen, I admit,
on the soaps. Every time I turn on the telly, there's some young babe hanging out of an uggo, old enough to be our da.
Does this look like the set of Fair City to you?
Ah, Conway. It's not just on the soaps. Real life too. If you're Donald Trump, sure.
You been holding out on us, Joey. Are you a secret millionaire?
He doesn't like the Joey, but he almost hides it behind a wry grin. I wish.
Not everyone's all about the money, Steve says. Aisling could just like the look of him.
Nothing wrong with that.
Maybe. Do you look like George Clooney, Joey, on your days off like?
You tell me.
I grimace, waver one hand. Gotta tell you, pal, I'm not seeing it.
So I'm dying to know.
Why would she go for you?
Don't tell me you never wondered.
McCann shifts, unfolds his arms, shoves his hands in his pockets. He says,
she was a badge bunny.
We thought the same thing. Aisling led the whole lot of us down her garden path. What me and Steve need to know is whether McCann believes it still.
A girl like that goes hunting for a badge, I say. And you're what she brings home.
Seriously?
McCann's jaw moves.
I was there.
And so were plenty of others. Horgan's is wall-to-wall cops.
So why you?
Because she wanted a D. She liked to hear about the job. What cases have you worked? What it was like? What did you do next?
Gave her a thrill.
You know what I'm talking about?
The grin's a nasty one. I don't blink.
She picked me out because I was old enough and dressed nice enough that she figured I was a D. She knew her stuff, that one.
When she heard I worked murder, that was it. Her eyes lit up.
I'd have had to hold her off with the garden rake.
And you saw her.
Why would I want to do that?
Because you're married, I suggest. I hear to some people that means you don't go sticking your dick in any hole you can find.
McCann lifts one shoulder.
We had a few shags. It happens. It was no big deal.
Good call. If Aisling was nothing but a shag, then there's no reason he would have killed her for having another fella. I ask.
You do that on a regular basis, yeah? Cheat on your missus?
No.
Ever done it before?
No.
Then what was so special about Aisling?
Never had a board that good looking try it on with me before. And me and the missus, we hadn't been getting on great.
I figured, why not?
Me and Steve throw each other a quick sideways glance, letting McCann catch it. I say, that's a lovely story. Romantic. But it doesn't match Lucy Reardon's. McCann shakes his head.
Who's Lucy Reardon?
Aisling's best mate.
Short, dyed blonde hair, cut up to here. Ring any bells?
At that he laughs, teeth bared like an angry dog's.
That little dyke. I'd say her story's different, all right.
She wasn't Aisling's best mate, whatever she told you. She's a hanger-on who was arse over tip in love with Aisling, and she was raging that Aisling had found herself a fella. Of course she's going to tell some story that makes me the bad guy.
Steve says, "Where'd you meet Lucy?"
"You already know that. Your witness who saw me meet Aisling. You think I don't..."
"We need your version."
McCann flings himself back in his chair, folds his arms across his chest again and stares at us, lip curling up.
"The two of ye are pathetic. Do you know that? Sitting there, trying your little interrogation techniques on me, going off on tangents. I was doing that to scumbags, actual scumbags, when ye were picking your spots and snogging posters of pop stars. Do you honestly think I'm going to fall for it?"
"It's not about falling for it," Steve says, wounded. "We're hoping you'll help us out here."
I say, "Where'd you meet Lucy? Was that not in our story, no?"
"Ah, come on, man," Steve says, leaning forward across the table.
"You know as well as I do, we're looking to scupper her story. You think we want you to be our man? Are you serious? If we find out you did this, we're fucked. You think we want to sit out in that observation room trying to decide whether we're going to charge one of our own squad with murder?"
McCann turns those deep-set eyes on me. He's got years more practice being expressionless than I do. I can't read anything there. He says,
"You've got no reason to love this squad. You're fucked anyway. Might as well take someone down with you."
Even though I know what he's at, the matter-of-fact tone sends something cold into me. I say, "I've got no problem with you. You've never done anything on me." He nods.
"If you've got any sense at all," he says, "you'll walk away. That's me giving you my best advice. The same as I tell one of my own young fellas, if he was sitting where you are. I didn't do this, so you're not going to prove I did. If you try, all you'll do is fuck yourselves up. Forget leaving the squad. You'll have to leave the force. Maybe the country."
We've all told a suspect his life is over if he doesn't do what we want. The cold works its way in deeper anyway. I say, "Where'd you meet Lucy?" After a moment, McCann shakes his head, slow and heavy.
"Your funeral," he says. "She was in Horgan's with Aisling, keeping an eye on her. Aisling sitting there in her little shiny dress, sucking on her glass and enjoying everyone staring while she picked out who she wanted. And the other one, with a puss on her, giving the filthies to anyone who'd look twice at Aisling. Aisling told me after. She said Lucy dragged her to the pub because she wanted to cry on Aisling's shoulder about how she couldn't get a fella."
The corner of McCann's mouth goes up. For a second, his face looks almost soft.
"She was real innocent, Aisling, in a lot of ways. She was like a kid. She honest to God thought Lucy was looking for a fella.
Have you checked Lucy's alibi?"
"Yeah," I say, and realise what I've admitted when I see his grin widen. "Rock solid. Sorry. But you wondered. We did our job. Like you're just doing your job right now."
The grins turned savage. "I'll bet £100 that Lucy one's trying to put this on me.
What's she saying? I hit Aisling. I treated her like shite."
Me and Steve do the sideways glance again.
"Not exactly," Steve says.
"Actually," I say, "not at all." McCann's face has gone back to blank. He wasn't expecting this.
"According to Lucy," I say, "you treated Aisling like she was made of diamond. What you two had going on wasn't a few shags. It was the real thing. The big L." He laughs, a ferocious bark, loud enough to startle all three of us. He's trying too hard.
"Jesus fuck. You believed that?
Are you saying you never told Aisling you loved her?"
Before he can answer,
"Careful. We've got texts from Aisling to Lucy."
"Maybe I did.
I've got news for you, Conway. When a fella who's trying to get into your knickers says it's love, there's a chance he might be bullshitting you. Or has no fella ever bothered?
According to the texts, I say, you and Aisling saw each other a bunch of times in August, but you didn't start doing the do until the beginning of September. If you were only there for the riding, what was that all about?
McCann shuts down again, takes his time, weighing up his options. In the end, he says, I liked Aisling. She was a good girl. Sweet. She was looking for thrills, like I told you. But she wasn't some vampire type getting off on the guts and gore.
She hadn't had an easy life. Her dad died when she was only little. Her ma had multiple sclerosis. Aisling was one of those carer kids till the ma died a few years back. There hadn't been a lot of excitement in her life, so she wanted to hear about mine.
I'd swear he believes that. I can feel Steve clocking it too. We've still got our grenade.
She told Rory the same story. Dead da, MS ma. No wonder she skidded away from it so fast. Using it to get McCann where she wanted him was one thing. Using it on someone she wanted in her real life, that was something else. But the story was getting stronger, getting away from her. It came out anyway.
Me and the wife, we've been having a rough patch. It was nice to be around a woman, like my company. Nice to have somewhere peaceful to go. No one giving us all that about what a waste of space I am. Made everything that bit easier. That was what it was about at first. Just the bit of peace.
The pull at the corner of his mouth says we don't need to point out the irony here. I say, where'd you hang out?
I'd pick Aisling up somewhere near her place and we'd go for a drive. It was summer. She'd bring food. We'd take it for a picnic down the country. We'd find somewhere with a view where we could sit and talk.
McCann's trying to keep his voice flat, but the longing rises up and he can't force it back down. He stops talking.
Ah, I say, sweet.
You never brought the poor girl for an actual meal, no?
Or a drink, even?
Just had her make you sandwiches and sit on the grass, getting ants in her knickers.
She never had a problem with it. Why should you? We went to our local once. I didn't like it. Dublin's still a small town. The wrong person sees you. He tells his missus who tells her ladies, club pals, and one of them's your wife's best friend, and bang, you're sleeping on someone's sofa.
Because you went for a pint? Steve raises his eyebrows.
Sounds to me like you knew. Deep down, this wasn't just friendly chats.
McCann's lip lifts. It's meant to be a smile, but it edges on a snarl.
Sounds to me like you've never been married.
Well, yeah, sweetheart, I did spend the evening on the piss with a gorgeous young blonde, but we were only chatting, honest to God.
You think that's going to fly?
Not with my wife, it's not. Steve gives him a grin for that.
Fair enough, he acknowledges. I'm starting to think I should stay single.
You and everyone else. But the grin fades fast.
Me and Aisling, I'm telling you. It started out innocent.
How did that change?
McCann shrugs.
He's turning wary. We're moving into the edges of dangerous territory.
Jesus, Morn, I say, in an undertone McCann can hear just fine.
He stuck his dick in her, is how that changed. He waited for his chance, and when he got it, he banged her like a cheap drum.
You want the guy to draw you a diagram?
McCann stretches his neck sharply. He doesn't like that.
Jesus, yourself, Steve tells me in the same undertone. I'm not asking for their favourite position. I'm just asking what made things go that way. This is the monk McCann we're talking about. He didn't go in there planning to cheat on his missus.
He gazes hopefully at McCann. McCann stares back.
What do you think made it go that way? Man and a woman spend a bit of time together. They get to fancying each other. One day it gets out of hand.
I've got one eyebrow high.
Laugh all you want,
You tell me, why would Aisling be with me if she didn't want me? Just like you said at the beginning, I'm not rich and famous. You're a D, I point out. To some people, that could come in useful. I thought that. I'm not a fool. I wondered if she might be dodgy and looking to get a cop on side. So you ran her through the system?
I did, yeah.
Go ahead and dob me into the gaffer, if that's what it takes to make you feel big. But don't tell me you've never done it.
Ah, background checks, I say. The foundation of every beautiful romance.
Like I said, I know I'm nothing special. I had to check, but Aisling came up clean as a whistle. She wasn't even looking for me to square penalty points. She wanted nothing from me. McCann spreads his hands. This is all I've got. If she wanted me, it was for this. Me and Steve let that lie just long enough and come just close enough to looking at each other that McCann gets edgy.
What?
He demands. The affair, I say. That began in September.
The beginning of September, yeah. Date? I don't remember.
I've made him lie rather than sound like the sap who is clinging on to every tiny detail. And he knows we know. I let a flicker of a smile slip through and see his jaw muscle roll. We'll leave it at the beginning of September, I say, being generous, which gets another twitch of his jaw. And it kept going till last weekend. Any breakups along the way? Anything like that? McCann has his arms folded again. His cop face is back, a flat slab.
No, no problems, no arguments. Everything was great.
Autumn, Steve says thoughtfully, examining his pen. Winter, and not being crude, but you two weren't just chatting anymore. I'd say the picnics up the mountains weren't doing the job for you, were they?
Where'd you meet?
None of your business, grits McCann's teeth, but he says, her place. Steve frowns.
None of the neighbours ever saw you?
Because I didn't want them seeing me. I went down the laneway behind Aisling's house, over the wall, in by the back door. She gave me a key. And there's the autumn intruder.
Fair play to you, climbing walls at your age, I say, almost holding back a grin.
McCann doesn't like that either.
Better than the gym, any day.
How often were you there? He'd love to lie about that, but he can't risk it.
A couple of times a week. It depended on work, my family, all that.
How'd you make the appointments?
I'd leave her a note saying when I could call around, or if I got a free hour or two I wasn't expecting, I'd just go round to her.
Where'd you leave the notes?
Post it in a 7-Up bottle. Throw it over a back wall. She knew to check.
We didn't find any post-its in the house.
I'd take them back when I got there. Get rid of them.
I do, startled.
Why?
Why do you think?
Because I've been in this job too long to leave evidence floating around.
The cold, flat glance says, I'm way too long to get tied in knots by the likes of you.
Jesus, I say.
Lot of hassle for the odd shag.
Depends on how good of a shag.
That nasty grin again. But I've seen McCann use it on suspects and it doesn't work on me. Why not ring Aisling or text her? Your number wasn't even on her phone. Why not?
Because I didn't want it there.
And why not go in her front door like a normal person? He eyes me with dislike.
Why the hell do you think?
I'm asking you. Did she get off on the top secret hush-hush vibe? Yeah? Or did you get off on knowing she had to be ready for you to show up at any minute? She didn't have to do anything. I wasn't her boss.
I say, picking my words carefully, would you not have been angry, let's say, if she hadn't?
McCann's jaw clamps.
What do you mean?
What I said. You had Aisling sitting at home, day in, day out, ready to jump whenever you decided to pull the strings. If you had pulled and she hadn't jumped, what would have happened?
Nothing. Most of the time I let her know I was coming. It was only now and then that I called around to her out of the blue.
If I'd showed up and she hadn't been there, or she'd been busy, I would have left and come back another time. End of story.
I'm all sceptical. You sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
You wouldn't have given her the odd slap, no? Not to hurt her, just to teach her she couldn't mess it about.
McCann says, I've never hit a woman in my life.
I say. Okay, you made Aisling set her phone on swipe lock because you wanted to be able to read her texts, right?